Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And what's it going to take? So it's interesting that we have a federal holiday today. And it's interesting that, you know, everybody wants a holiday in the land of the free. In other words, the only holidays that this nation should truly recognize, the only holiday, not that we shouldn't recognize things throughout the year, but you got to understand, folks, that when government tells an employer that you have to give your employees paid vacation, then you now have a very tyrannical government. They don't have any authority in the Constitution to be able to do that. They can't declare holidays. They can recognize and see what was ending up happening was holidays were becoming a, in the 1800s, when they started declaring holidays, those, the federal holidays were only for federal employees. But even at that point, to give somebody something for nothing is a it is tantamount to a crime against humanity. Just taking from those who are struggling and are working and giving to somebody that has a job just to not work, to not be productive. That is antithetical to the principles of this nation. Now, I do believe that the whole nation should shut down on Election Day, period. Election Day, a business can't open, a business can't begin to work until their employees have voted. In other words, it should be a mandate that if, you know, if your employees can't come back and prove that they have voted, which means that, you know, we have to have some awakenings to understand our responsibility. But we'll get into that later because I just don't want to make this whole show about vacations and so forth. What I want to do, because I've, even though I've never done this, I think there's merit in actually doing this on Martin Luther King Day, because this man gave a speech that in so many ways is really revered as a holy speech. And it was a very good speech. But in his speech, he actually has some some misnomers. And so what I want to do is I've never done this before, so I'm going to read the I Had a Dream speech. It's just barely 3 pages, a little over 3 pages. And so I want to read this because we need to place context to what was going on in America and how this nation had turned its back on liberty shortly after the Constitution was ratified. You know, one of the things that we do know is that blacks, freemen who were blacks, were able to vote in every state in the Union except, I believe, 3. And freemen were then later on, their ability to vote was becoming suppressed by states. In other words, after the first decade plus, almost 2 decades or so, states started playing games and saying, well, we're not going to let you vote. Because they realized that those freemen, the black freemen who were alive in America, were actually, you know, becoming a potential voter block that could spell trouble for those who are trying to divide and conquer America. And, you know, America has constantly been divided. And as a matter of fact, unfortunately, we see this I Have a Dream speech as a divisive speech. But, you know, As a matter of fact, it's very common when we hear the I Had a Dream speech and how, because I've actually witnessed, you know, in a crowd of blacks that, you know, when the white people go, you know, by the character of their skin, there's this context that, oh, well, you know, yeah, that's a snappy line, but we got to go and read through the rest of it because, you know, there's other things that people just don't, they're not getting it. Well, let's get it, because the only way we can get it is to actually read it or go through it. And so I will add a little editorializing as we go along. But as it starts off, I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. 50 years ago, in other words, he's making reference to the one man who used score in a speech, in actually the Emancipation Proclamation by Abraham Lincoln. So right away, and I'm editorializing here, but right away you can tell this reverence he has for this tyrant and this misplaced reverence in thinking that this tyrant was actually, you know, a respecter and somebody who embraced equality for blacks, when that wasn't the case at all. It wasn't the case at all, folks. And so this is how our education system has completely manipulated us in loving such a prejudiced president. I mean, he was outwardly spoken evilly. I mean, anyway, let me move on. 50 years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon, light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of captivity. 100 years later, the Negro is still not free. 100 years later, the life of a Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles or the handcuffs of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is languished in the corners of American society and finds himself exiled on his own land. So we have come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. In other words, you know, an inheritance to this. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious that today America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring the sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we have come to cash this check. A check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now, the interesting thing is that, you know, as we look in the education system has now already fully converted America from a land of freedom and sovereignty, individual liberty and individual sovereignty, to mob rule. Because the reference of democracy is literally mob rule. Why would any man who is espousing freedom and liberty, unless you do not understand? Because when we look at mob rule is equality by the mob as determined by a mob, not the rule of law. A land of republicanism creates the rule of law, that the law is our king. Democracy means that we, the people, as a mob, will determine what is justice, what is, you know, what you can have, what you can't have. And that right there, the huge problem with that one line, because it actually invokes this thuggery, this concept of socialism and communism, that a mob justice, and this is how we saw, this is how we've seen this progress. Even today, when we've seen all of the riots of the late, you know, 5 years or so, or even going back even further, it is a, it is mob rule demanding demanding what they would call justice for unjust behavior, like Michael Brown. Justice? Again, I don't want to dive into all of the little details, but we always take a situation, and, you know, as we peel back all of the information, we realize that, you know, people get hurt, and some people have died. Some people have died not because they were walking away from choir practice, but because they became thuggery. They started acting ill. I'll just say they started acting and behaving something that is unacceptable in a civil society. But Martin Luther touches on this as well. He goes on and says, "We have come to this hallowed spot in America of the fierce urgency of now." This is no time, I'm reading this again, "This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlight path of racial justice." No, not racial justice. What we don't want is racial justice. We want justice for all. In other words, all people have the privilege of being in a system that the justice is blind, where you're actually judged on the facts and the law, not by your context or color of skin and so forth. "Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood." Now, racial injustice was definitely, it was prominent. It was prominent. And anybody that says during the 60s that it wasn't is completely and objectively lying and a flat-out denier of the facts and truth. The fact is, folks, that after the Civil War, the fact is Lincoln would not have done anything. As a matter of fact, Lincoln would have divided this nation even further. So I believe he served his purpose by, you know, finally changing the course and the direction of the war and fixing the one problem that should have been fixed during the ratification, or actually during the writing of the Constitution, where we abolished slavery. That's when it should have happened. And it was baked into the Constitution to abolish slavery. Anybody that has not listened to the show, you need to listen to the show, because we go through this, that the Constitution was actually going to get rid of slavery. It was going to phase it out. And that was evident because there was no need for the Missouri Compromise unless you wanted to maintain slavery, because that's exactly what it did. And so this is when men in our political and justice systems decided that we wanted to ensconce this nation further in slavery. And then even after the Civil War, men of authority and power kept on making decisions that were absolutely abominable and unconstitutional. Jim Crow laws are unconstitutional. Any person should be able to walk into, it doesn't matter what your race, gender, sex, I should say, male or female, doesn't matter what you are or who you are. When you walk into a business, and it doesn't matter, you know, I mean, as long as you got shoes, a shirt, and so forth, it should not matter where you sit in that business to be served. They cannot tell you because you're in other words, when we look at, you know, laws or a system at a restaurant and in our society that allows people to be treated differently, that right there is a bill of attainder or punishment, where you take a certain class of people and say, you can't have front of the bus privileges. That right there is a violation of the Constitution. Bills of attainder and laws that are bills of attainder and or punishment, because we're going after a group of people, is unconstitutional. Nor can, you know, any business create a law after the 14th Amendment. No business within a state could make a law to ask the state or the city to enforce a law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. So we finally got it right with the 14th Amendment. We finally got there with the 14th Amendment, not because of Abraham Lincoln, but because of those radical Republicans that basically inscribed into the Constitution that nobody, regardless of who you are, can be discriminated against. And you can't create laws to discriminate against a class of people, period. Anyway, moving on. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summer of Negroes' legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. Equality is not the job of government. Equality is maybe a social context, but equality is not for the law. The law should be blind. In other words, this whole concept of affirmative action, the concepts where we have to take now just to, you know, to punish others for two wrongs don't make a right. Bottom line, that's exactly what we're looking at in this social justice system is just the more tentacles of communism permeating throughout our government and our society in America. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights, and rightfully so. The whirlwinds of revolt will come to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But there is something I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold. Now, this is where I think he really hits the nail on the head, because shame on all of these activists today. Listen to what he says. But there is something I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. So keep these words in your mind when we actually start thinking about the Martin Luther King, because it's with restraint, it's with discipline that we, and with civility, that we all must put aside our differences and our self-interests. Oh, that recipe that the framers used. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. He's calling people out. And where is he? Where is the leaders like him today and actually, you know, standing up? We look at leaders during the pandemic that were actually fanning the flames of riotous behavior and insurgencies against the law. Anyway, he goes on, again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny, and that we have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must take the pledge that we shall march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, quote, when will you be satisfied, close quote. We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied as long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating "for whites only." All of these things, my friends, are violations of the Constitution. States were constrained to not allow these things to happen, and they did. And it was only in those states that actually put aside and actually enforced liberty for all, where we actually saw, you know, that state actually start to, you know, heal and start to prosper. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot walk and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing which to vote for. Or I should say not walk. That a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing to vote for. No, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteous like a mighty stream. I am unmindful that some of you have come here of the trials and tribulations. Some of you have come from fresh and narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms and staggering by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffrage, continue to work with the faith and unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi, go back to Alabama, go back to South Carolina, go back to Georgia, go back to Louisiana, go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal. I have a dream that one day the Red Hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners, will be able to sit together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering in the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that for my four little children, one day live in a nation where they will no longer be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And we got 8 seconds, so I will continue the I have a dream as soon as we come back from the break. But I want you to understand, folks, that this never should have happened here in America. Never. All caps there. Never should have happened in America after that 14th Amendment. If we are a Republican form of government, and see, folks, had we actually started teaching Republicanism and not democracy, because the only reason that we are able to oppress each other is by the force of mob rule, not the rule of law. And so as we turned away and as we started embracing democracy, that was our problem. I'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so now here is where the back chatter comes, because a lot of white people love to cite that line that I just read. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will no longer be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And so you hear, at least if you're in those circles, and you hear those blacks, oh yeah, the white people sure love to, you know, bring up that line, but they don't bring up the following lines. And this is what he says. I have a dream. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, that one day right down in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and little white girls as sisters and brothers. He's pointing out that at this very moment, at this point in time in the history of the United States, there has been this concept that a state would nullify and interpose, you know, the rule of law, against the rule of law, that they can continue to violate the rights of humans. The constitutional and civil rights of any human, in using segregation and basically talking about doing that. As a matter of fact, what should have probably happened is that, you know, those people after the, well, actually, you got to understand, America, you were divided by a reason and a cause, so that America could be led down a path of being conquered later. After the Civil War, the focus was to maintain division, racial division in America after the Civil War, I should say, after the 14th Amendment. Which is why the 14th Amendment was such a shot across the bow, especially the financial shot across the bow of England. We were not going to pay them back. We weren't supposed to pay them back by the law. Made it illegal to pay any nation that fronted money to these states that basically rebelled. Now, had we actually, you know, lived the spirit of the law, then those southern states would have just seceded. And Lincoln was completely wrong that they could succeed. Lincoln was basically saying they couldn't, but they could. As a matter of fact, they had, I'll just say, constitutional standing to secede. Not that slavery was the right thing to do, but the northern states had no authority to oppress the southern states financially. As a matter of fact, the federal government was to be impartial completely. They were to treat each state in blindly. I mean, each state should have had to have the requirement of uniformity of how the federal government treated all states. They couldn't invoke the abominable tariffs, which is what ended up happening. So because the Missouri Compromise got passed and because slavery was going to now be inscribed upon and actually compelled upon states joining the Union, well, here we go. Now these folks in the public services, in other words, our elected officials who are public servants, many of them basically said, okay, if you're going to, you know, pass an unconstitutional law like the Missouri Compromise, then we're going to start passing tariffs. We're going to start attacking slave states with economic measures. And see, America became more and more divided, more and more divided. It just got worse and worse. And people suffered. People died. Anyway, back to I Have a Dream. So here's some of the rest of the stuff that he says that, you know, helps people understand what he's talking about. I have a dream. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places shall be made plain, and the crooked places which will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith. This is all biblical Christian doctrine. And look at how even the blacks at this point in time were being basically subdivided by Islam in America. How did that even happen? How did Islam even get a toehold in America? Ah, because it seemed to meet the needs of, you know, some mechanism of fighting injustice, and Islam was a great way of doing that. It was an evil way of doing that. This is our hope, this is our faith, that I will go back to the South. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with a new meaning, my country, 'tis of thee. He's mixing, you know, two principles. He's talking about the whole world. All God's children will be able to sing the new meaning, my, and then a nationalist song, my country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing, land where my fathers died, land of my pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside let freedom ring. That right there is a song of nationalism. The fact of the matter is, when he said this, this very first line, this day will be the day when all God's children be able to sing with the sing with the new meaning of, you know, about freedom. Well, I'm sorry. Not all God's children now today are able to sing this beautiful song of freedom. Ah. See, he was seeing a glimpse of God's plan of what we'll call liberty or globalism, that what we have in this nation, all flesh should be able to enjoy. I cannot fathom how a loving God and creator who created all and given us all of these beautiful things, how only the people that live in the geographic longitudes and latitudes of a particular nation can enjoy liberty. The Constitution was designed to go to all people. This is why the call must start to come from the leaders of this nation to actually call and invite those people in the nations of the oppressed. First, start there. Start with Hong Kong, start with Taiwan, start with Crimea and Ukraine. No more assistance unless you choose to be a part of liberty. We don't want to see people suffer, but we're no longer funding wars to maintain the military-industrial complex because, bottom line, nationalism does that. We can actually go and fight righteous wars once again in freeing and liberating people and liberating all people. What would this world be like? What would happen if we all actually united on the concepts of individual liberty and individual sovereignty? And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true so let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightened Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from the Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and hamlet, from every state and city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black and white, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing the words of the Negro spiritual. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we're free at last. Just fathom the concept of breaking the boundaries that he placed in this speech to say, let freedom ring from the tops of the Himalayas. Let freedom ring from the tops of the Swiss Alps. Let freedom ring from the tops of the Andes Mountains. There are all sorts of mountain ranges, from Kilimanjaro in Africa, from Mount Fuji. Let freedom ring for all, so that all people will have the liberty to choose for themselves what they will do with their lives. Just imagine where this world would be. Once we got over the one real nation, the thing that was dividing this nation that had to be resolved, unfortunately, because of the disobedience of the Constitution by the Southerners who mandated the Missouri Compromise, or were actually able to get that federal mandate in. And it wasn't just the Southerners. That actually got passed by the manipulative legal organizations in America, because it was the lawyers and the judges and those people in politics that saw, we need to support this. And bottom line, whether it was because of biases, racism, or because somebody really understand the truth, but by the concept that divided, they fall. That as long as we can keep America divided and not unifying, they will be ripe for destruction. And the reason we're divided today has nothing to do with the Constitution, has nothing to do with what this country and how this country was formed. It has everything to do with people who have machinations in trying to move us under a level of compulsion and control. This is why I say that, every communist out there is a hypocrite. Any communist that owns a car, that has, uses a lock, or has a house that locks up their things, they're no longer entitled. If you become a communist, private property should be abolished from you. Everything that you have should be, free game for everybody. Nobody should have any property, because that's the concept of communism. Even socialism is an abomination when it comes to liberty. No person should be compelled. Government should not have those controls. That we, the people, need to take back our controls. And so only in our Constitution, there's no constitution on the face of the earth that has built into it mechanisms for us to restore individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And as we look at the design of the Constitution, only God knew what we would need, and he gave us, with the 14th Amendment, he gave us everything we needed. He closed the loop with that 14th Amendment. And then from that point on, we had the opportunity to do the right thing. And boy, when it comes down to it, the carnal man, the natural man, has prevailed in trying to divide and conquer over race, over any issue that persists throughout mankind, whether it be gender, sex, or what have you. I mean, look at where we are today. We're in such an ideological divide. Folks, it's about time to start understanding and demanding the rule of law. We have to stand up to the social justice warriors who are basically, they're recognizing that it is within their grasp of stealing our liberty and compelling mankind. Because if America falls, if America actually goes into the throes of communism, then the world will go into the throes of communism, this new global communism that they want to inflict upon us all. But we have everything we need, which is why we have First Amendment petitions. We're creating this national repository for you on Reclaiming the Republic. And as a matter of fact, we've got what's forthcoming is a few petitions that really stand to basically refute any concept that any foreign entity can purchase property in the United States or even control a business. No foreign business can operate within the United States. It is antithetical, and it is a violation of the Constitution because the federal government cannot authorize that. They can't even regulate businesses within states, let alone allow foreign businesses to come into the states and operate. They do not have the authority to do these things. So this is why you need to read these petitions, because these petitions, one by one, will start to teach people. And it is through the petition process, like with Martin Luther of the Protestant movement, how he was able to use his 95 theses, his 95 petitions, in moving people towards reforming Christianity. I don't think that was his intent. I think that he hoped that the Catholic Church would have, you know, come to their senses and done the right thing, but they didn't. And after 10 years, it became evident that they needed to break away and reform Christianity. We need to break away and go back to demanding full compliance with the Constitution. We have to stop supporting tyrannical government and unconstitutional government. The government should not be involved in every facet of our lives. That was never the design, to empower government to that level. As a matter of fact, the design still is, and what is still the law of the land, is a government that is limited and defined by that their constitution. So, I hope everybody was able to at least appreciate the Martin Luther King perspective. But I'm here to tell you that when we really start looking at it, even within his speech and the paradigm, we could see how some of those paradigms were absolutely incorrect. Democracy, nationalism, why? Why wouldn't we want to bring all nations, allow all nations to slowly migrate and adopt liberty, individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and make a republican form of government, one based on the rule of law, their standard as well? It's not that they need to do it themselves. They need to become a part of the whole. This, are we not world citizens? Well, we're not world citizens as long as we're divided by a United Nations that allows this manipulation and allows the concepts of communism to flourish. It is only through liberty that we can unite. The other path is subjugation. The other path, communism, is compulsion. It is not liberty. If we are to be a free people, all people, regardless of race, regardless of your sex, we are to be a free people. So as I look and how I can see how this nation really struggled over nationalism, even the framers, I've said this, the framers didn't realize, you know, that this Constitution was God's plan for global governance. They just didn't realize this. which is why they took the positions that they did. And it took a long time, and we've gone a long way in being able to actually prove with empirical data that all of these monarchies, all of these communist states, all of these dictatorships, in contrast to those who live in the United States, life is very different when the people have individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And you know what? It took us another 100 years after the 14th Amendment, another 100 years to even understand how our own government was basically redefining the law, redefining things, and been stealing us. Stealing our great inheritance of liberty for our children and our posterity. When we see the courts of the 60s and the progressive eras from the early 1900s throughout, constantly baking in social justice. Are you kidding me? It's time to turn. We now recognize what we have to do, and it's not that hard. We have everything we need. So let me dive back into the Electoral College, because on Friday I didn't really get a chance, and I don't necessarily have what's left of the 7 minutes to close on this. But I will say this, that when we start understanding republicanism and we start understanding the importance of our representation, when we choose a representative to go into the House of Representatives, whether that be in your state house or whether that be in Congress, that is your suffrage in government. They need to understand that they are bound to support the Constitution. When you allow them to function and operate outside those confinements, when you allow them the latitude to compromise your liberties, you're only signing a death warrant for our future. The demise of this nation cannot stand with that type of government. This is why this nation has been attacked and attacked and attacked from external forces so that they could actually put us in a position to seize control. Just remember, no person is legally obligated when they've been defrauded, whether that be by fraudulent debt, by fraudulent spending, or what have you. Our government does not have the authority to do almost all of the things it's doing. That's even our state government, because our state government has been basically, by taking money, they get compelled by the federal government can't compel them. The federal government can't create, give out money and then create these strings. That is all unconstitutional. They don't have the authority to do these things. They have no authority to be able to manipulate and or coerce states by saying, if you take this, then you have to use this money for that. As a matter of fact, we're not supposed to take the money at all. They're not even supposed to be offering it. That's how insidious this has become. It has become the status quo. It has become the norm of operations. So the Electoral College is another form of representation. If we restored the Electoral College and we started looking at how we could actually implement our Electoral College, if we actually tied the federal Electoral College so that the electors not only chose the president, but your elector in your state, especially, when you have an elector that represents 30,000 people, then just like your representative in Congress representing 30,000 people. That's what we're supposed to have for representation. In other words, you would have an elector. If we're following the Constitution, you would have an elector and a representative. The elector would only be the one that would choose your president, your state representative, not your state representative, your state governor, and of the state offices, secretary of state, attorney general, that there would be no direct elections. We need to root out democracy, root out direct democracy. We need to root out the citizens' initiatives and invoking government. In other words, when we look at these measures that people create, where they say, well, we want to be able to do this. And so in their constitution, they allow the function of mob rule. We have to do everything we can to root out mob rule. We have to start utilizing and understanding the beauty of the rule of law, that the law be the king, and it be a limited and defined law, that no general laws ever be granted. As a matter of fact, if there's an inclusion in the Constitution, that would be something I would say is a necessary amendment. That no general laws can be granted within this Constitution, that each role, responsibility, power, and property must be enumerated and defined. That way, when they come along and say, yeah, well, we can do this because it's implied, all implications are gone. The interpretation by judges and the redefining of the Constitution by judges can no longer be allowed or accepted. And we have to undo all the damage that the judiciary has done to this nation. There is merit, and as a matter of fact, there is a demand that we actually start invoking the rule of law, invoking republicanism, invoking these principles. I can't tell you, when we look at, you know, just how far we've gone in the choosing of the president, keep this in mind, that no elector is legally bound to cast a vote a specific way. That the Constitution clearly allows the electors to choose whatever president they feel would be the best president. And they choose the vice president, whoever they feel is the best. This is why when we have a small field of electors, it's easy to control. If we actually were following the principles of republicanism and 30,000, we would see that we would have thousands of electors, that no longer the party would be able to control them, that we, the people, would actually be able to, you know, if we started creating standards, and as a matter of fact, we need to establish standards. You have to understand the Constitution if you even want to be an executive. There's nobody that should ever be. Obama should never been allowed. I mean, even though he was ineligible because of natural citizen, but a person like Obama should never have been able to be on a campaign at all. He should not have been out there for an elector to choose. Here's a man that deliberately said, we need to do whatever we have to do to transform America the way he wanted to, instead of living within the rule of law. He's okay with violating the Constitution and mob rule. Folks, I don't care what your creed is, what your ethnicity, race, you know, I don't care what your sex is. If you are going to allow mob rule to destroy one, it will destroy you as well. All we've got to do is look through the annals of history. You can go back as far back in, you know, prior to ancient Greece. Ancient Greece, they even understood those principles, that regardless, when people have the power of mob rule, they will destroy every potential threat, which will actually and eventually become all people in one way or the other as a threat to government. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. Happy MLK Day.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.